You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP.
Welcome to The Weekend. I'm Angela Kocherga, and this is our weekly news and public affairs program here on KTEP 88.5 FM. And I am so excited. I've got three young journalists with me to talk about their reporting this semester at the University of Texas at El Paso, UTEP. They are reporters for Borderzine. That's our nonprofit online news magazine covering life on the U.S.-Mexico border. And it's an award-winning training program for multicultural, multimedia student journalists. So we have a lot to talk about. I want to hear about what they've been working on. I know, but you need to find out more. It's been an exciting semester and a lot to cover. So, Nicole, let's start with you. One of your stories got a lot of attention. It's called Chica Chat. What is that?
Well, Chica Chat's a nonprofit organization in El Paso. It was started by a group of four young women, and it's aimed to like bring young women entrepreneurs together to kind of create a support system for each other. So they meet once a month and they just, you know, develop friendships, develop networks. And so I thought it was something really important to highlight.
Yeah, the business aspect and the learning from each other. You were one of the first in El Paso to really spotlight that program, that entrepreneurial program. And again, this is Nicole Madrid, and she's one of our Borderzine journalists. And she also worked on another fascinating story, an issue that we even see here on the UTEP campus about the feral cats, the stray cats, some people might call them.
Yeah, so I did a story on El Paso's trap, neuter, return policy. So basically what that is when someone sees a feral cat, they can call in and report the cat, and it'll be humanely caught. And then they'll have a vet neuter it and vaccinate it, and then they return it back to the spot that it was found at. The idea is that when you return the cats, they protect their own little community and they keep other ferals from coming in and taking over that neighborhood. So I saw a lot of negative feedback on it on social media, just people I think who didn't understand exactly what it was and they didn't understand the concept of returning the cats. So I felt that was kind of like an important thing to talk about and just to inform people so they would understand it better.
How would you explain it? I am familiar with that program, and the reason you do that is because the population will slowly decrease if most of the cats in that colony, as they call it, are spayed and neutered. If you just keep letting them go free, they multiply. And if you just trap and do euthanasia, then new cats just move in.
Yeah, and since cats are territorial by nature, they do protect the areas that they live in. So they do keep new cats from coming in. So in the long run, it does help. And it helps, you know, the health of the cats. It helps the health of the neighborhoods because you don't have a chance of cats, you know, catching diseases and then spreading that to maybe pets or anything else. And I think overall, it's good for the neighborhoods to have that program.
So it was controversial, but you were helping inform our readers.
Yes.
So, Aaron, you covered a lot of interesting stories, not just spot news, but also, you know, went in depth on some things. So, mm-hmm. But let's start with some of the events you covered. You covered two rallies.
Well, I've actually, in the last 6 months, I've covered three. I did Ted Cruz for another media source, and then I did Donald Trump and Beto O'Rourke for Borderzine. And it was a very interesting contrast between the two, actually. I was getting yelled at a lot at the Trump rally, believe it or not.
Really? From the people at the rally, what were they saying?
I don't want to quote them exactly because they used some foul words, but they just don't trust the media as to be expected.
And that is something interesting that we're all seeing. And as a young journalist, you're experiencing that firsthand, this mistrust. What did you learn covering those rallies?
I kind of learned to think quick on my feet because for a lot of these I was, you know, doing multiple things. I was doing audio, I was doing video, I was shooting 360 video. It was just a lot to juggle. So I kind of had to learn to decide when what media type would suit the scenario best. You know, if a soundbite would be better than video, or should I shoot 360 or just get audio? I had to learn how to choose when to use what outlet.
And that is a real challenge now for all journalists, but young journalists coming in, you are juggling a lot. It's multimedia, so mm-hmm. it's audio, it's often video. And, of course, you're trying to do the reporting and interview people. So, and then you're in the middle of a busy rally, and sometimes, as you said, you have people who are yelling and not happy to have us there. So you got the full experience. Mm-hmm. And got to see a lot. And your story also looked at the costs of the rally, the president's rally. And
yeah, I was doing a story about the general impact and seeing, you know, kind of what it did for the city and about security and stuff like that.
And I think one of the things we're finding out is the city is still waiting to get paid for some of those services.
Yes, they are. I believe it was KVIA that published that they sent a bill to the Donald Trump campaign for close to $500,000.
The city, yeah, and they're waiting to get paid from the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron Martinez, we'll come back around to talk about, you had another story, a couple other really fascinating stories that you delve deeper. So Jasmine Herrera, another Border Zine reporter, you've worked on several fascinating stories. One that, you know, a lot of people here locally will relate to along the border and beyond, even beyond the border, is this idea of bocho, what that word means. Tell me about that. It's had an evolution.
Yes. Yeah, so basically the story started because there was this question about the word bocho, right? Because in the past, the connotation has been negative and people were a little bit like wary of using that word. But now in new generations, there's this new kind of trend of embracing the word. So I was kind of curious here in El Paso because we have such an amazing Mexican-American community. Like, how are we using the word and how it has, like, evolved? So I went and interviewed several people from our community, some students from here, from UTEP. I went also to interview Estela Reyes, who works at the La Fe Center. And I got really, really good insight to how this word relates to the people here in the community and a lot of their personal stories, what I thought was amazing. Because even though some of the stories were really personal to them, they were able to kind of share that with us. And I thought it was a really interesting way of seeing how this word has evolved for the community.
So explain for people who may not understand, it really is a generational thing. Older people, and by older, maybe people just over 30, may not feel that word is positive. Because what do they think of when they hear pocho?
So usually the older generation, what they all kind of refer to is this lack of identity. So for a lot of people calling someone pocho, usually who calls you pocho is someone from Mexican descent or someone directly that lives in Mexico and is referring to this term of like, well, now that you live in the United States, you have lost some of that Mexican roots because some of the new generations here don't really speak Spanish or are not as close to their roots. So it was kind of this way of saying like, we're different, we're separated because now you're there and I'm here. So it was kind of this back and forth between Mexicans and Mexican-Americans.
Yes. And the idea now with younger people is, how are they embracing this? What is their idea or their concept of pocho?
It's really interesting because now people are seeing like, well, yeah, I am Mexican-American, and that means that I have two cultures. So it's not only I am my Mexican roots, but I also have a lot of this American, and they embrace this I am American concept, right? So they're bringing together both cultures, which is really interesting. And pocho refers more to language. So you're seeing Spanglish, per se, both English and Spanish, and they're seeing it as something positive. So I think that's something really good.
It's interesting because they're blending. It's not either or, but it's more. And so it is fascinating to see how people are embracing that. And I think you had somebody you interviewed said, maybe I don't speak Spanish fluently, but I speak enough, and the way I speak, it's good enough.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's really fascinating. The other story you worked on, tell us a little bit about that.
I also worked in the exhibition Uncaged Art that is presented here at the Centennial Museum at UTEP, and it's an amazing exhibition. So basically, Trujillo was this detention camp for kids that most of the kids were from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. So basically, they were detaining these kids here since while seeing what will happen with their immigration process. And a group of teachers came and did a project. And they created, I think it was over 200 pieces in 4 days. And of those 200 pieces, UTEP was able to get 29. So in this Uncaged Art exhibition, what they're doing is that they're exhibiting the art that the kids created. And it's really, really beautiful and really interesting because the assignment was do art with something that you're proud of from where you come from. So you see a lot of flags, a lot of churches, a lot of, they have the Quetzal, that it's a national symbol. So it's really, really beautiful. And they created this amazing sculptures and drawings. And the exhibition, what they're doing is that they're presenting it in a way that they create the environment. So they created a tent that you go in and it's all fenced up. So you see the art behind the fence. And I talked to Yolanda Leiva, that is the professor here at UTEP that was able to get the art. And she was really interested in presenting the art in the same environment that the kids created them. So that's what the fencing is there. And that's why the tent is there. And it's this whole thing of like going into the tent, seeing the art, and then coming out to feel that kind of freedom that they felt.
It's really beautiful. It's fascinating, really. And your story has some great photos and a video that shows. And that's what we want to stress, that all of the stories done by Nicole Madrid, Jasmine Herrera, and Aaron Martinez, these are truly multimedia stories. You have the text, you have photos and video, so you really get to experience that. And, of course, you can also come down here and look at the artwork yourself, but these really give you a window into some of the stories that we're working on. You've done a great job this semester. So, Nicole, tell me, I mean, out in the field, what have you learned? I mean, tell me about maybe a third story and what you've learned being a journalist out there.
Well, I've learned that it's definitely important to have patience. I've had a lot of times where I have interviews set up and then I get to go do the interview and the person's like, oh, no, I can't do it today. So you have to be flexible, I've noticed. I've had a few cases where I have to really persuade someone to do an interview, especially once they see a camera come out. They're like a little hesitant and they're like, no, I don't think I want to talk on camera. And so you just kind of have to be persuasive. You have to like kind of coax them into it. So those are a couple of the things that I've taken away. Also, just as far as creating the stories, I've learned how important it is to get so much B-roll for a video.
So for people who don't know, the term B-roll is in addition to interviews, you're getting the video that tells the story. And you had to do a lot of that, your story about the boots. Talk to Beto's boots?
Yeah, so the local bootmaker, Rocket Buster Boots, they're downtown. They, when Beto was running for Senate, they made a pair of boots featuring a piece of artwork that was done to kind of promote Beto, that was done by a local artist, Patrick Albadon. And so they decided to make these boots that showed, it's like a cartoon of Beto.
And for the few who may not know, we're talking about Beto O'Rourke, who's now running for president, El Paso and Beto O'Rourke.
So what they decided to do is, because at their shop, they have a lot of different samples. And so the people who work there, they borrow the samples all the time. Regardless of size, they'll put inserts and stuff to make them fit. So like if they want to wear a pair of boots on the night out, they do that. So what the owner, Navina Christie, decided to do was to make it kind of like the sisterhood of the traveling pants. So she put out on social media for anybody who wanted to borrow the boots to go ahead and sign up. And they'll ship out the boots to anyone who wants to wear them. All the person has to do is pay for shipping. Otherwise, it's free. And so last year, they had them for about a month during Beto's Senate run. And they said, I think, 18 different women borrowed them over the course of a month. So they went all over. They went as far as New York. They went to Austin, to the Austin City Limits concert. They went to the Willie for Beto for Texas concert. They actually debuted in Hollywood at a party hosted by Judd Apatow. So I thought it was a really interesting thing to cover because I like to cover stories that kind of talk about like communities that are being built. So that's what I was interested in, not so much the boots, but the community that was forming around them. And for that one, I needed a lot of B-roll. I needed a lot of interviews because there's a lot of women who've worn the boots. Again, on that one, that was another instance of people not wanting to talk on camera because I actually had discussed with a woman who lives in Dallas who borrowed the boots to do an interview. And then when she found out it was going to be on Skype and it was going to be recorded, she backed out.
Oh, that happens to all journalists, but you still have a really great story and got plenty of people who were willing to share on camera. And that's that building a community, that is a thread that goes through a lot of your stories. And it's so important, whether we're talking about the Chica Chat Entrepreneur Club or the figuring out how to deal with the feral cats and of course, the boots. I mean, why do you think this storytelling, and especially storytelling from here along the border by people who live here and know it, is important?
Well, for me personally, I'm all about community. That's another thing that I've learned this semester is that I really like to do stuff that helps to cultivate communities. So I think here in El Paso, especially, like a lot of people who don't live in El Paso, they don't really understand just what life is like here. So there's a lot of misconceptions about El Paso. And one of the things that we have is a pretty strong sense of community, especially with Juarez, too. So it's not just El Paso. It's El Paso and Juarez, especially like with Chica Chat. Women in business are often like pitted against each other. So for me to be able to highlight that there's like this group of women who are building each other up, who are working together and supporting each other, I thought that was really important.
Very important. And you're right, taking back the stories of the border that so often we have outside people come in and trying to find the border. So that's why your voices as young journalists are so important. So, Aaron, you delved really deep into an interesting issue we don't hear a lot about in El Paso. You probably are now almost an expert on electric cars. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, actually, my initial plan for the story was to do like the cost of switching to an electric car. That's what it started out as. And I was going to use my background in automotive because my father's a mechanic and he's been one for almost 40 years. I've been doing it for almost 12 years. And that's what I was going to start with. But then it quickly transformed into, you know, there was a lack of support for them and a lack of infrastructure in El Paso. And I wanted to find out why. So what I did find was that we are making some changes, but they're very small changes. And there's been a number of things holding El Paso back from, you know, embracing this market. But that's basically what my story was about, is just finding out why we're not supporting them.
But regionally, you found some interesting contrasts, you know, in the West and in areas where other parts of Texas, as well as other parts of the West, people, there are these clean city coalitions.
Yeah. So in East Texas, actually, there's clean city coalitions in like Dallas, Austin, Houston, places like that. And then in the West, there is a memorandum of understanding. That's what they call it, signed to create an electric vehicle corridor across a bunch of Western states. So the support was there in the West and it was in East Texas. But El Paso was kind of like this black hole of no infrastructure support. But they're starting to make some changes.
Little by little. Mm-hmm. You did interview someone. Las Cruces has made big inroads. And somebody who owns a trucking company. Tell
yes.
me a little about. And he also has a personal car.
Yeah, I talked to Royal Jones. He owns Mesilla Valley Transportation. And he talked to me about his company, about how he's proud of how green his company is. But I mostly wanted to talk to him because he did own an electric vehicle. And he did talk to me about a bit about why he decided to buy it, what influenced the decision. One of it was, he did get to talk to Elon Musk about it, and
he had one of the expensive first
yes,
models of the
very
Tesla.
Very expensive, and he did tell me that it wasn't worth it. He's not making up for the cost, but he says that he did see it as the way forward. We're all going to be in electric cars someday, is the way he put it.
And the costs are coming down because you did a test drive in one of the less expensive, more accessible vehicles. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I went and talked to a technology expert at Rudolph Chevrolet, and he did let me drive a brand new Chevy Bolt and, you know, told me about the car. And the prices are pretty comparable to what, you know, most cars are now. It's certainly cheaper than most trucks are now. But yeah, the electric cars are coming down a lot in price.
The big challenge in our area is that range anxiety, finding where to
yes.
plug in and to charge it up with electricity.
And yeah, he did mention that one reason El Paso was kind of hesitant about it. I'm talking about Alex Ledesma, the technology expert. He did tell me that his common question that he got when it came to the electric cars was, if I'm not at home, where do I charge? And that's what he said was the main thing holding people back from buying them is, you know, you get the charging station at home, but he says, when you're not at home, what do you do? He said the you can find a gas station on every corner, but you can't find a charging station everywhere, which was the primary thing holding them back.
In our region. And, of course, really important because of dealing with the issue of pollution, especially along the border with a lot of idling vehicles and these days right on the international bridges. So that was one of the things that was interesting to find out. Let me ask you the same thing I asked Nicole. Why do you think it's important to tell these stories and to tell them from here, from people who live here and know the border?
I think people beyond the border can be very misinformed sometimes. I was just in Mississippi a couple weeks back, and one of the questions we got asked was, well, how do you like living on the border? Like, do you feel safe living there? And I said, well, you know, the national media, it's kind of painted as like a dangerous area. And I told them, well, they say it's dangerous, but we have no idea what they're talking about because we're fine. I can go for a walk at 11 o'clock at night and not be worried. You know, there's no murderers running around. There's no drug dealers coming across. It's important to give our perspective as people that live here rather than letting people rely on those perspectives of people that don't live here. You know, if someone comes to report here, they might be here 3-4 days. They're not getting the full experience. We've lived here our whole lives, and it's important that we show what it's actually like to be here.
That real full perspective, just as if we went to any city and decided, oh, I went to this neighborhood and now that's the whole city. Mm-hmm. And so it's great that we have people who live here and young journalists who really know the communities telling these stories. Yasmin, so I'm asking you the same question. Why do you think, especially as you're out there interviewing so many people, you talked about the uncaged art, and you also did a really fascinating story in Ciudad Juarez about a group that promotes community service globally and locally. Why is it important to tell these stories?
I think, like they were saying, right, about how, especially now, there's so much like focus in El Paso, so much happening. Beto is running, Trump was here, the caravans, the immigrants, there's such a big spotlight. But the stories that are being told through lenses that is from people that come a couple of days. And they just see a portion of the story. And I think that's really important what my classmates here were saying, that it's important to give voice to the community from people that actually live here, that know how it's like to be here every day. And to, for example, I cross every day the border. I'm from Juarez. So it's really important for me to do stories in El Paso and in Juarez, and to see that other perspective, right? For example, in this story I did about this organization, I discovered that Juarez is the city in the state of Chihuahua that has the most youth-led organizations. And that's something that no one talks about, right? We're always this really dangerous city, but what about all the community service that is done here? And, like, for example, in my other stories, what about, like, the experience of the people that live here? So I think it's mostly about that, giving a voice to the community and saying, yes, this is happening here, but there's also so many other aspects of our city and of our culture and of who we are as a community. So I think that's very important to kind of like give another light to what the rest of the country might be saying about us.
And that is one of the advantages we have with you reporting for BorderZine, because you do know both sides. And we do have so many students that come to UTEP who go back and forth and really experience both cities on a very direct level. And so you're a great correspondent. We have others who can go into Juarez and report from someone who understands the city. Like you said, it's not just about the violence and some of the positive things that are happening every day. And it doesn't mean we shy away from the difficult stories, because I know, Aaron, you were recently, I saw you when I was out there reporting too, at the new tent facility, or as CBP wants to call it, the soft-sided structure, which is for migrant families, a temporary holding facility. What was that experience like? There was so much media.
It was interesting. There was just so much going on, because not even that it was like a super exciting place to be. It's just, you know, you're following one person around as he gives a tour to 50 people from media across the country. And it was interesting.
And you had to do it again, juggle. All of you have been juggling out in the field, the video, and you did some 360 video.
Yes, that one was particularly difficult. Kate Gannon sent me mostly to shoot as a photojournalist, but then she asked me to get her some sound bites, and then I was shooting 360 video as well. And, you know, it was hard to try and juggle all of these different, you know, mediums, because I was specifically sent for photos and audio, but choosing between listening to his tour and photographing the area, or listening to his tour and getting 360, or photographing and getting 360, I had to make a lot of decisions on the fly.
It's a big challenge, juggling all that for all journalists of all levels. So, you know, sympathies from my part. And Kate Gannon is one of the great UTEP professors who, along with Dino Chiecki and, of course, Sita Rocha, the director, have made Border Zine what it is now in its 10th year as this great training program. And we have these wonderful stories you can see online at borderzine.com. And I would wrap it up by asking each of you what's next for you as far as storytelling or journalism or what you've learned this semester. What will you do next with it? Nicole?
Well, my first interest has always been music. So I would like to work either in radio or to go into like reporting for a magazine that will let me cover music but also cover social issues. I have discovered this semester that I really like covering like social stuff. And, you know, right now my last story for Border Zine is going to be it's a blog on how Hollywood needs more superheroines. So to highlight stuff like that, like the inequality in the media and, you know, just other social issues would be really, really great, in my opinion.
Well, no, that's the other wonderful thing, the blogs from a personal perspective. So yours is about superhero women?
Yes. And just how there's, you know, a real lack, and a lot of times the kind of the response that superhero when films get, like kind of the response that was to Captain Marvel, people kind of trying to say that it wasn't necessary to have a woman superhero. So I'm discussing that in my blog.
So combining that love of pop culture or music, but also these social issues, and that's certainly a great way to tell those stories and reach a wider audience often. So thank you for that. So, Aaron, what's next for you?
I have a long road to get to where I want to go. If I had to be honest, I have my eyes set on National Geographic just because of the visual storytelling, which is my favorite aspect of it, because I can tell you all day long what's going on, but I enjoy showing you way more, which is why I live with my camera strapped to my back, because the visual storytelling is what I want to do. So, but next, I have a study abroad in Cuba, which is somewhere I've always wanted to go, and I'll be there for 10 days. But beyond that, you know, I'm undecided right now.
That's okay. It sounds like you have a plan, and I look forward to seeing those photos from Cuba. That's wonderful. Those study abroad are great, and I think you will make it to National Geographic. We'll be looking for those photos
sure
later on,
so.
And videos, because now we do photos and videos, as you said. And Yasmin, what about you?
Well, I think that reporting this semester really helped me decide what I wanted to do. So I'm really interested in everything, like Nicole said, community-related, and especially I'm really interested in cross-cultural communication. So I want to do a master's in that. Eventually, I want to become an international correspondent, and I want to become an editor. That's what I want to do.
Yes, in management. We need that. We need more multi-talented and, of course, women in those high-level positions. So I'm really inspired, having had a chance to see your stories, talk to you about your stories. I mean, it really makes me feel good about what the future holds, and I know there are good things in store. So I've been speaking with Nicole Madrid, Yasmin Herrera, and Aaron Martinez, our young journalists at UT El Paso who report for Border Zine. You can see their stories, all of these stories and more, on borderzine.com. And we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules at the end of the semester. Thank you all for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Angela Cocheriga, and you've been listening to The Weekend.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Robert Lopez. Our producer is Dee Wu. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.